The Catholic Channel Sirius XM 129 presents Just Love with your host, Monsignor Kevin Sullivan, Executive Director of Catholic Charities of the Archdiocese of New York.
Welcome to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is our weekly conversation about the church in the world. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. So we kind of are continuing our summer journey. We're going to be speaking this week about what's going on in religion in China. We're going to be speaking about what's going on with some music we just had right across the street. Now, you guys on the radio can't see that if I look out the window right behind me, that I can see the Radio City Music Hall. So we're going to talk a little bit about music with Fanny, and we're going to talk about that. That's where they just had the MTV
Video Music Awards, VMAs,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and they had, some of the people actually were kind of performing on the street, weren't they?
Or yeah, the Backstreet Boys performed right on top of Radio City.
Yeah, but if they were the Backstreet Boys, shouldn't they be on the back street?
On the back street, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, so, I mean, we got to get this stuff straight.
Yeah.
Anyway, but so we're going to talk a little bit about that later on in the show. And you know, it's tragic what's going on. You know, the report that came out of Pennsylvania about clergy sex abuse and how it was handled, covered up. Those were very, very tragic. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. I know a lot of other people on the Catholic Channel have, but I think this is something we can't be silent about. We can't use any mere words. We got to talk about actions that we take. So we're going to talk about that a little bit later on in the show. But I am delighted that we're going to be speaking about one of the situations going on in China, and we're going to be speaking about religion there. And I'm delighted that I think we'll go to our first guest right now, who is Ian Johnson, who is an author. He's written a couple of books, and he's writes for the New York Review of Books, the New York Times, New Yorker, National Geographic. And I'm delighted that he's making time for us because he actually is in Berlin now. And I thank him for joining us on Just Love. Ian Johnson, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, I am really, really delighted. I mean, I'll share. I mean, I just kind of noted within the past couple of weeks, I saw in the mainstream media that there was an article about what was going on in Christianity in China. And then I saw something about what was going on in one of, I guess, the provinces of China with regard to Muslims. And both of those had to do with kind of persecution or censorship or trouble that was be given to both of those groups in different ways by the Chinese government. So I just thought that was kind of a very, very intriguing situation, that where in other parts of the world you get, you know, persecution against Muslims by Christians, and in other parts of the world you get persecutions of Christians by Muslims. And here you got the largest country in the world, China, where you have both of them suffering persecution at the hands of the government. So I thought it would be, I wanted to learn more about it, wanted to get somebody who was smart. And so I'm delighted that you've joined us today on Just Love. Thanks for being with us.
Well, thanks again.
So how'd you kind of figure out that you liked the China and you wanted to learn more about what was going on in China? What got your interest in that?
You know, it just goes back to a decision that I made in university. I didn't intend to study Chinese. I was studying journalism, and there was a language requirement, a foreign language requirement in the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences. And I had learned French before because I grew up in Montreal in Canada before moving to the States. And I thought, just as a lark, there was an ad that a professor had put up on the wall saying, looking for students to take my Chinese class. I thought, oh, that'd be funny. I'll take this Chinese class, you know, just for a couple of semesters to fulfill the requirement. And that'll be the end of it. But he was a very gifted teacher, and I just really, really liked the classes. This is at the University of Florida, and it was Dr. Chauncey Chu, and He made the language fascinating and fun, and I had a chance then to do an academic exchange program. Went to Beijing. This is back in the 1980s, so I'm dating myself already. And then I just really fell in love with the country and just wanted to keep learning about it and going back. And so it's been a part of my life since then for the past 35 years or so.
Well, I'm delighted that you are with us today. And, you know, I mentioned that Ian Johnson was twice nominated for a Pulitzer Prize, and he's written two books, one called The Souls of China, The Return of Religion After Mao, and another book probably a decade or so ago called Wild Grass, about civil society and grassroots protest in China. And then he's also written a book about a mosque in Munich in 2010. So give us a little bit of, you know, we have listeners throughout the country. Give our listeners just a little bit of, you know, the introduction to China and China and religion and society and religion. I know that's a grossly unfair question, but you know, if you're a journalist, your editors give you, you got to explain the complexity of the world in about three paragraphs. So,
right. Well, I'll tell you, when I first went to China in the 1980s, I went there, as I said, an exchange student in 1984. I thought there was no religious life in China. It was just after Chairman Mao had died and the sort of radical communist period had ended, and it seemed as if almost every place of worship had closed, be it a mosque or church, a Buddhist or Taoist temple. They all seemed closed, or maybe just almost like museums that you might have in an atheist country. And you know, China was and is run by a communist party, so that seemed to sort of fit. But actually, this is a mistake on my part back then, and religion was slowly coming back. And over the past few decades, we've seen a huge revival in religious life. There are four officially recognized faiths in China. There's the indigenous religion in China, Taoism. There's Buddhism, which came over to China a couple thousand years ago and is pretty much almost like an indigenous religion. And there are the two Abrahamic faiths. There's Islam, which came to China over 1,000 years ago, and Christianity, which has had a permanent presence in China for over 400 years since the Jesuits first established a foothold, although there had been earlier Christians who had come to China as long ago as 1,300 years ago or so. But anyways, so we got these four big faiths, and there's been a huge revival in the number of churches, temples, mosques that have been rebuilt over the past decades. The number of people going there has really taken off. And I think this is partly something we can recognize in our own society, this search for meaning in life, that China, we all know, is an economic superpower, and President Trump is often railing against China because they're, you know, eating our lunch and they're producing everything and taking jobs away and so on. But for a lot of ordinary people, they think, you know, the economic takeoff is all great, but there's got to be more to life than just making money. And many people are turning to religion for answers to these questions. And so that's sort of the big context. There's a big takeoff, but there's also periodic crackdowns that you.
So let me again, just Ian Johnson, who is an expert on China and a variety of things in China and religion, just to give our listeners a little bit of picture, because, you know, sometimes I think because we got these two oceans on both sides of the United States, we kind of can get a little bit turned in on ourselves and don't know. So give our listeners, just so they have a context, when we say China, how many people we're talking about?
Well, China has about 1.4 billion people.
So, and now, so compared with
four times the size of the United States.
Okay, and
four times the population. The right. Area is about the same as the United States.
So okay,
it's actually, the two countries have about the same amount of space.
Okay,
if you include Alaska in the United States, and but China has four times the population, so it's a pretty densely populated country.
And if we, again, just to give our listeners a little bit of sense of comparison. If we use one of the indicators of, let's say, the gross domestic product, what are we talking about with regard to those in comparison?
China is getting close to the United States. So it has got the second largest economy. I think most economists think that within the next 5 to 10 years, it will overtake the United States. But that's only in absolute numbers. Don't forget, you got four times the population, so the
right.
standard of living is not caught up.
Right.
So maybe you could say roughly, let's say it's got a quarter of the per capita gross domestic product. So there's the economy's growing quickly, but there's a lot of people also who have to be
right.
taken care of.
Okay, so that gives. And let me just say this for our listeners. So we got a country that geographically is about the size of the United States, including Alaska, but a country which has four times as many people in that space that is there. That's what we're talking about. And a country that is producing, getting pretty close to the same amount of products and services that we are in the United States. Not quite yet. And then, because if you divide it by the people, so we got a lower kind of per capita, but that's what we're talking about. So I thought it would be a good idea, Ian, if our listeners just had a sense of, what we're talking about as we now go into a little bit more of the question of religion there. So, when you were there, you kind of had a little bit of an awakening that there was, quote unquote, more religion going on there than you had thought because it was a communist country. What's been going on since the 80s there?
Yeah, well, just a big takeoff in religion. Again, the number of churches, temples, mosques has shot up. The number of believers has increased rapidly. So it's now got a very vibrant religious landscape. The numbers are very hard because religion is a sensitive topic in China, so there aren't really good surveys or opinion polls and that sort of thing. But you could say roughly 300 to 400 million people, so maybe about a quarter of the population regularly worship in one of these religions. And in raw numbers, you have a large number of China is the largest Buddhist nation in the world, and it has somewhere around 60 million to 100 million Christians. So the raw numbers are pretty high also.
So, Ian, that's one of the things I did a little bit of. I had to give a talk a while ago, and I basically, in the whole atmosphere we're in kind of in the United States is, fake news and what's the real stuff. And so I just came up with 10 things as part of my talk that everybody would, think is absolutely true or not true, but they're just simply the other way than people think. So one of the questions I threw out was, I said, so which country do you think, in absolute numbers, what's the third ranking Christian country in the world? And again, as you just said, the numbers are hard to come by, but at least if you take kind of the more generous estimates of the numbers of Christians in China, China comes out number three in absolute numbers. It's kind of a little bit in competition, I think, with Mexico, maybe third or fourth, but it's in raw numbers, it's huge.
It is. No, it is. It's remarkable. And it's also really interesting. You go to the big cities and Christianity is not only, if you compare it, say, to the United States, where we often say, congregations are getting older, things like that. In China, it's a younger population, and many people, very successful, white-collar professionals who are going to church. It's really those very people that, say, are most important to modernizing China, who are most intrigued by Christianity.
And to kind of pick up on a point you made a little bit earlier in our conversation, is a little bit of your kind of sense of this is, okay, they're making it economically, but now let's look a little bit for some meaning in our lives in addition to the economic progress?
Yeah, very much so. China has a lively social media scene, just like we have in the United States, and there often are these reports that go viral on social media about people who don't help other people. Somebody who gets knocked over by a car, and people walk by and don't want to get involved and don't help the person, and sometimes the person dies, and then this causes a lot of breastfeeding and people wondering what kind of a country have we become, what kind of society are we, where we aren't willing to help our fellow neighbor. And so this is something that many Chinese people worry about, the lack of compassion in society, the lack of charity, and this is causing, I think it's helping to fuel this turn to religion.
So we kind of, you know, have a relatively broad range of maybe 60 to 100 million Christians. How about the other Abrahamic religion? How many Muslims there?
Actually, not that many. Maybe about 25 million. So, but they are.
Hey, 25 million. You could run a good sized country with 25 million people.
No, that's true. Yeah. I mean, you know, but and also I think in China, what makes it interesting strategically is there are many Muslims in the border regions of China, and I think this is part of the concern the government has that their border region in Central Asia has this what they consider to be a foreign religion, and I think they still do view the Abrahamic faith, despite the fact they've been in China for centuries, as more foreign than the other faiths, and they view them with a little more suspicion.
Well, you know, I would say from my perspective, not being an expert on this, I do think probably there's a reality to that where, although I can certainly speak more about Christianity, where we claim Christianity is universal, et cetera, and at least theologically and theoretically it is, but you really have a hard time understanding Christianity without Western civilization, and you have a hard time without understanding some of those both philosophical and mindsets there. And again, in a different way, I would say Islam also. So I can see how China might, you know, without, you know, reasonably kind of painted or say it is a Western religion. I mean, it's not an irrational position, you know, on a common sense level, from my perspective.
Well, no, I think if you say, you know, where's the Catholic Church headquartered? It's
right.
Not Beijing.
Right. Right.
And a lot of Protestants are very active in sending people, I'd say, basically modern day missionaries.
Right.
Their mission work is not legal in China, but many people go on a tourist visa and conduct, you know, workshops and stuff like that. And then if you look at Islam, you know, one of the most important things a Muslim person can do is go on the Hajj, go on the pilgrimage to Mecca, because that's in a foreign country. So there are more foreign ties that are involved with Islam and Christianity than with Buddhism and Taoism. So I think the government is concerned about that, foreign control.
So we're speaking about China and religion in China with Ian Johnson, who is a correspondent and author, New York Times, New Yorker Magazine, New York Review of Books. He's written a number of books on China. So speak a little bit, because I think the article that caught my attention on Muslims and Islam was precisely that it was in one of those, I think the article may have described it as a quasi-independent region, territory, or whatever, and that precisely what you said, that was some of the concern that was there. And I think they even compared that region, quite frankly, whose name I neither can remember nor pronounce, but they kind of drew a little bit of parallel with Tibet, I think, in terms of that. Is my memory serving me correct?
Yeah, no, that's right. It's a western part of China, Xinjiang, and it's just north of Tibet. So you got Tibet and Xinjiang are the two big western regions of China, and there has been a low grade, I would say, independence movement, maybe a terrorist movement for more autonomy, for more maybe even independence for Xinjiang, and the government has reacted with draconian measures against, setting up closed circuit television cameras almost everywhere, facial recognition software, and has built this big surveillance state out there, which and also banning many outward expressions of Islamic faith. For example, men who might be wearing a beard, women wearing a headscarf, not a burqa, but even just a headscarf, sort of banning these things. And that sort of caused a backlash. And so we're in a sort of spiral in Xinjiang where it's a downward spiral, I think, where things are not that hopeful at this particular point.
And did they actually close a mosque or two there, or not give a building permit? Some of those type of things are the types of ways that they kind of persecute, or they try to suppress the practice of Islam?
Yeah, they've been in some areas, say a town or a village, they'll say, okay, one mosque is enough, so you guys have three or four mosques, so they close the other mosques and keep one open. This has been going on now for a few months. And that's another way to try to keep the religion in check. I just worry that this kind of heavy-handed methods will backfire in the long run.
Well, you know, it's interesting, and when it comes to these type of things, I think depending on the time frame you pick, whatever the issue is, you're both right and wrong. Sometimes you're right in the short term and you're long in the wrong term and things like this. And you know, who knows what the reaction is over time. And I think that's, you know, sometimes a little bit of, I mean, I'm old enough. You talked about going to school in the 80s. I mean, I went to school, you know, even before that. I mean, and I remember you had our guy from California, Herbert Marcuse, who, you know, made a living in his academic career by talking about repressive tolerance, that the United States, you know, had a lot of steam let off by just being tolerant about certain things, and that kind of kept the lid on because you let some of the steam off. So I think there's something to what you say, you know, about that. You're not quite sure what the reaction is going to be in the intermediate or even long term with regard to that. But Ian, let's shift a little bit because it's a little bit of a different situation with Christians and Christianities there. And there's, again, if I recall correctly, a lot of Christianity there is in kind of house churches. It may not be as formalized in big buildings or churches as other. Am I correct in what I'm recalling about that?
No, that's right. It's about half the Christians do not worship in, you know, what you recognize as a church with a steeple and pews,
right,
and stuff like that. So a lot of it is, house churches is one way to look at it, although that sometimes they're bigger than that. Sometimes it may be that somebody rents even a floor of an office building or something like that. And you will have in these unregistered churches, you'll have hundreds of worshipers. And sometimes they're not legal structures, but the government turns a blind eye and says, well, if you're not engaging in politics and you're really just pious people who want to worship, then I guess that's okay. So the government has, up until recently, been allowing that to happen over the past few decades. I think more recently it's gotten a little more heavy-handed and saying, well, if you're not registered, if you're not part of the government-run church, then you have to close down. That's not true across the board, but we're seeing signs of that.
So it's interesting because, you know, when I heard you mention that, what came across in my mind in the United States is, you know, maybe some of the storefront churches that are opening, that open in neighborhoods where, you know, they rent a storefront and maybe you got 75 people in the congregation or 50 people in the congregation. It's a church, it's a congregation, but it's not a big formalized church.
Yeah, and a lot of the ones in China are sometimes really, it's almost like do-it-yourself, where you have these, especially in Protestantism, you'll have a number of autodidactic preachers who just, you know, are charismatic enough, and they just say, I'm starting a church, and people start coming to their home, and then they rent space, and before you know it, they've got a couple hundred people going to the church, and maybe the theological knowledge is not the deepest. But,
well, you know, Ian, and again, established churches like the Catholic Church, sometimes we can get a little bit arrogant, or in these days, we don't have a right to be arrogant about anything. But
right.
You know, with a with you know, we have a long history, and kind of we maybe say, you know, if you see a church where it's the founder and pastor, you know, it may not be too, it may not have been around for too long if it's, you know, it may be a few weeks old. Anyway, but it is an interesting phenomenon. And again, I am by no means an expert on this at all. And really, you probably know a lot more about this, but it is one of the reasons, well, I think the concern of Pope Francis to kind of figure out what's going on there, at least with the Catholic part of Christianity, and to establish relationships there, I think is precisely because what you point out is there's far more religion there than maybe one might initially think. And so, you know, with a church like the Catholic Church, which is kind of hierarchical and which, you know, probably doesn't get the storefront thing so much, how do you kind of navigate that, especially in a way in which the government wants to register a church, etc.? Got any insights into that piece of what's going on in China?
Yeah, I think the church overall sees this as an area where there could be a lot of growth in Catholicism, but the problem is getting the relations with the government right. And the sticking point has been who gets to appoint bishops. And Beijing, the government in China, wants to appoint the bishops, and of course, the church in Rome thinks historically that should be its job. And so they're trying to, they've been negotiating now for a couple of years about how to find a way that would satisfy both sides, maybe giving the Vatican veto power, or having one side say, well, we could accept these three people, you can pick one of them, something like that. There's been, historically, there's also been arrangements like that done in other countries over the centuries. So there could be a solution like that. And I think the Pope seems eager for a deal, and I think maybe also the authorities feel that this is a way to make sure that Catholicism is, let's say, under control, but that it's, you know, part that isn't running off on its own. And so I think there could be some kind of a deal that could happen. It's hard to tell.
Well, you know, Ian, one of the things that I find ironic about the Catholic Church, we kind of think tradition, I think, means whatever happened in the past 40 years, or at least in my memory. I mean, I just I became enamored by watching the Tudors, like, over the past couple of years. I mean, my God, there has always been cooperation in the appointment of hierarchy, you know, whether it was de facto or whatever. It was, you know, there have been periods of time where I don't know what it said on paper, but you had a lot of influence by the elected, appointed, inherited leaders in who was going to be bishops and stuff like that. So, you know, I think we got a tradition in which you try to work it out in a way in which you respect both sides of the equation. So, Ian Johnson, the correspondent, author, we've been speaking about religious practice, religious liberty in China. Now, let me tell you, I'm going to give you a chance. I assume the best book ever written on this is a book called The Souls of China, The Return of Religion After Mao, and published like last year. But maybe I'm wrong on that. Is there a better book than that?
Yeah, I've never heard of that book. No, I don't know who wrote that. It's got a dubious title. I'm not sure, but no, that's okay. Well, that's the book I wrote. And I try to give a sort of blunderbuss, a scattershot look at four different, at the major faiths in China, and try to take people through what's happened. I look at four different characters, groups of people, and so it's a it's an introduction for, and I hope it's written in an engaging way.
So how many
story.
Pages is it, more or less?
It's not short. It's about 350, 400 pages, something.
Hey,
like that.
Wait a minute. I am right now at page 867 of Chernoff's book on
just
Grant.
Feels like that. Right.
So this is a baby book compared with that. And right now I'm so committed to, actually, the Grant book is a great book. I probably, you know, now that I'm up to the 800s of the 900 pages, I probably could. But no, I've done this much. I'm finishing the book, so I can say I read it all. So with a mere 350 pages, we can finish that off in, you know, an afternoon sitting. So anyway, but Ian Johnson, thank you so much for spending the time with us on Just Love. Critically important topic, critically important place. And again, you know, in the midst of some of the politics going on, some of the things we're talking about, a little bit deeper understanding of what our probably closest economic either competitor or rival is just great. So, Ian Johnson, thank you so much for taking the time to being with us on Just Love today.
Well, thank you very much for having me and for devoting the time to this topic.
Great. Okay, thank you. So let's take a break. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is Just Love. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. Join us when we come back in just a moment on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Now, let's get back to Just Love and your host, Monsignor Kevin Sullivan.
Welcome back to Just Love. Well, that's Aretha. And Aretha passed away very recently. And so, in our third segment of the show, I'm going to talk with Fanny about Aretha, some of the contribution of R&B, how it fits in with some of our message. And we're going to talk about the MTV VMA stuff, which parts of it we're going to criticize because we didn't like it. But and we'll talk a little bit about that. But, you know, right now, I do want to spend a little bit of time and talking about the awful report that came out of the grand jury in Pennsylvania, which was basically a 70-year narrative of kind of putting together the tragic, awful, outrageous stories of clerical child abuse and the way it was handled by the bishops. Jake, I'm sure that some of the other shows here on the Catholic Channel have also dealt with it. I've heard some of it myself, and you've probably heard some of it being discussed.
Yeah. It seems like every show I've been on that I've helped out on has really been trying to get a handle on it.
Yeah. So it is really, really horrendous. And you know, I just want to kind of my emotions are just so negative on this. And you know, whether it's outrage or sadness, disgust, disappointment, anger, frustration. I mean, it's hard to come up with enough words. I mean, you know, I guess my first simple reaction was, what the? You know, and, you know, that seemed to me to sum up a lot of what I was feeling. Now, I know, and we just talked about this on the Catholic Channel. I've heard conversations. I've heard many inside and outside of the church, you know, have spoken. I'll share with you people. One of the other guests we were going to have on the show to talk about China, you know, he said, I'm not coming on the Catholic Channel in light of what's going on in the Catholic Church. Well, you know, I have no problem in saying I think that's a rather officious, statement by a tenured academic. So, I mean, I have no problem in saying that. In fact, you know, sometimes God writes with history. I thought the guest we had on was just wonderful and in terms of talking about that. So that's that. But there's a lot of people have spoken about it. I'm not going to quote them. You know, they've talked about tragedy, things are sick, criminal, clericalism, cover up, institutional betrayal. So, I mean, it's just a bad, bad thing. Fanny, if I would ask you, what are some of the words that come to your mind about it?
I think probably the same as you. I was completely appalled, disgusted, disappointed, disheartened. About the whole thing. I mean, I grew up, I guess, a cradle Catholic. Then I practiced my faith into adulthood. So, you know, I'm not the type of person that goes to church thinking that everyone is perfect, but this is beyond my comprehension. It's just ridiculous. And I've been trying to talk to my fellow friends, priests about it to kind of get, you know, their insight. And it's helped a little bit in my peace of mind, but it's just insanely ridiculous that this had to happen in our church.
Yeah. Tom, what's kind of like your words you kind of think?
You know, Monsignor, for me, it's been tremendous, tremendous sadness. You know, I do the justice and peace work for Catholic Charities, and I think, you know, what resonates with me is the tremendous injustice of some of these situations that haven't been handled. And so, the church has such a beautiful tradition of teaching about justice, of Catholic social teaching, of teaching about peace. And I just think, you know, when you reflect on what the beautiful things the church stands for and talks about, and then you end up looking at what some people have done and what some people have not done in response to terrible things happening, it just has brought out in me just a tremendous, tremendous sadness that I'm still praying through and trying to get through.
No, I guess, you know, I think a lot of the other shows here and a lot of people have, you know, commented on a lot of that. And I guess, you know, the perspective that I bring to this in a special way is this perspective of Catholic Charities, and it's particularly rending kind of our hearts asunder because, you know, we see our identity as Catholics. We're situated in the Catholic community of faith, and that's the community we draw our inspiration, our wisdom from, as do all the ministries of the church. And one of the things that we've always said about Catholic Charities, because we kind of look outside the body of the church to the work we do many times, but it is our firm Catholic belief in every person made in God's image and likeness that draws us to serve people of all religions and to serve everybody. And so, you know, kind of when clergy, my fellow clergy, we devastate lives by the things we do and betray core values. And then, you know, the bishops, you know, some of whom have really abdicated their responsibility, but no, they haven't abdicated their positions. And there's scant and delayed accountability. You know, boy, you know, when we think about it, we're appalled and our hearts, they're ripped open. And so those are bad, bad things. But I think the other thing from our perspective at Catholic Charities is, you know, every single day and every single night, Catholic Charities services protect and nurture poor, vulnerable, threatened, and abused children. And so that this has happened to, you know, to children is particularly hurtful. And, you know, we also know that, you know, we learn of abuse by staff, others, family. You know, we try to report it, deal with it promptly. And so I don't think at Catholic Charities, no way can we be self-righteous, and we can't deceive ourselves that our work and our programs, our agencies are perfect. But we can't not express our frustration outreach that kind of the leaders and the institutions of our church, our community of faith, you know, from which we draw our inspiration, that have acted in ways that are so unacceptable. You know, and while what I'm going to say next, it can't expunge and undo what has happened in the past. And I'm not an expert on all of this, but, you know, from what I do know, I do applaud some of the important steps that have been taken in the right direction. And I continue to pray, however, that we not become, you know, complacent, and that these reforms, that they're ongoing and as necessary, improve, they deal with new situations. And so, and I just fervently pray and hope that they do prevent the further abuse of children. And, you know, when it comes to Catholic Charities, I really do know what we have to do. I mean, in this critical time of hurt for the church, when we're hurt, threatened, shamed, well, much of it is beyond the control of Catholic Charities, but we can't be silent, we can't be paralyzed, and we can't give up on the Catholic community of faith, because it is our identity. And so, in a unique way, I think Catholic Charities is entrusted with that very precious part of the gospel, and therefore the church's mission of valuing and cherishing God's image in every person, especially the poor and vulnerable. And so we have to embrace this even more sturdily and double down on treating the poor, the vulnerable, children, adults, families, seniors, immigrants, those with disabilities, whatever it is, and with dignity and compassion. You know, we got to keep feeding the hungry, protecting neglected, abused children, kids with emotional and learning disabilities. We got to support them so they can succeed in school and in life. And we got to keep building housing, decent, affordable, for struggling working families and welcoming the immigrant, the stranger. And, you know, if you want to figure out how to complete that list, just check out the 5th chapter of Matthew's gospel and check out the 25th chapter. And that's our to-do list. And at Catholic Charities, we got to do that even more. And we can't allow this tragedy and its repercussions to overwhelm us. And we got to continue to respond to the ongoing demand of Jesus that we see him most clearly in our sisters and brothers in the greatest need. And, you know, and as we at Catholic Charities proudly embrace this mission, we got to also be humble and diligent to make sure we look at the planks that are in our own eyes and ensure we operate with the highest levels of compassion, professionalism, and ensure accountability, and that the resources entrusted to us are used efficiently, effectively, and for the purposes for which they have been given to us. And so, you know, this is not a easy time. And last Sunday in the letter to the Ephesians, there's a phrase in there which says, these are evil times, and we have to understand what we need to do. Well, you know, they are evil times for our church. Let's not pretend they're not. And we have to maintain our faith-filled mission and action. And, you know, at the end of the day, we can't forget to add a prayer or two or three or four or a million, because we certainly need God's help to kind of continue this. And we're going to take a break now, and we'll come back. We'll talk about, you know, how music can sometimes help us to understand what's going on in life a little bit better. And so let's take a break. This is Just Love. Just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself, and our world will be more just and more compassionate. We'll be back in just a moment on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Just do it. Just love. Just check out Monsignor Kevin Sullivan, who's here right now. Take it away, Monsignor.
Welcome back to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Just do it. Just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself, and our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. So we spoke this week about religion in China. And we kind of commented a little bit on the kind of the tragic, outrageous scandal items that have been revealed in a recent grand jury report about clergy abuse of children and the way it was mishandled by leaders in the church. And so we're going to take a little bit of a shift and kind of lighten up a little bit now, without in any way trying to ignore what we did with what we talked about it, but we're going to lighten up a little bit. So, Fanny, did you watch the MTV VMA Awards?
I watched all of it up until the last performance because I'm old, so I needed to sleep.
What was the last performance?
It was Aerosmith, Post Malone. I forget what song they were singing, but it was like a compilation of a few people.
So one of the things we want to talk about is Aretha.
Yeah.
Is Aretha Franklin. Now, I kind of was watching it because I'm older and more decrepit than you. So I watched it, but I fell asleep during parts of it. I woke up for a little bit, parts of it. I oftentimes like those things. Mm-hmm. And the... So help me. A couple of years ago, there was this great show. I thought it was, I don't know if it was the same one in which actually Katy Perry had on a white gown. Was this the same thing?
Yeah, it was the VMAs.
Well, let me tell you, I loved that. I thought that was a great thing. Mm-hmm. This one the other night, I couldn't quite figure out. I mean, as like we talked about before, they had the Backstreet Boys singing on the roof, not on the back streets, and kind of it was like, you know, and who was that one? Let me tell you, who was the one who kind of had half of a white face on?
Half of a white face?
Yeah.
She like was, a mask?
Well, I think it was like painted.
Like, I don't think I saw that.
Yeah, she was one of the commentators. She was one of the doing interviews on the red carpet.
Oh, she was probably MTV VJ then. Yeah, yeah, one of them.
Yeah, I mean, it was like,
I mean, they have a bunch of new people over there in the city.
Yeah, I mean, it was like I said, you know, can she figure out?
It's, it, you know, the VMA, MTV award shows, period. It's like the more ridiculous you dress, the better.
Well, she was dressed ridiculously. She was dressed ridiculously. Tell us a little bit about Aretha. I mean, why is she such a big deal?
You know, I didn't comprehend the level of Aretha Franklin until I had to research her. Just to start off, she's a singer, songwriter, and a pianist, which I didn't know. I didn't
really
know she played the piano. She started singing gospel at her church, New Bethel Baptist Church in Detroit. She was born in March of 1942.
Okay.
And then she died last week on the 16th. She started her career in 1960 at the age of 18, recording for Columbia Records, but achieving only modest success. Of course, she was so young, but she achieved commercial success and acclaim after singing for Atlantic Records in 1966 with songs like Respect, which we just heard, or R-E-S-P-A-C-T, Chain of Fools, Think, Natural Woman, I Say a Little Prayer. And then by the end of the 1960s, she was being called the Queen of Soul.
So that I Say a Little Prayer, did Dionne Warwick also do that?
I believe so, yes. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's the same one?
I think so. I'm pretty sure, yeah. I mean, I like Aretha's version better.
Better?
That's the one I've heard the most.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's... So now... Did she get her beginning in a church?
Yes. She used to sing at the Baptist church. And actually, one of her most famous famous songs, which is of the rendition this song, Amazing Grace, right. She sang at the church and she never recorded it. She just sang it live and they recorded it at the church. And it's the only recording that they have.
Really?
Of that, yeah, of her singing that song because she never went into the studio.
So do you think maybe Jake could find that for us?
Maybe.
It is
maybe
coming up shortly, Monsignor.
All right, so you want us to talk some more or you want to play it?
It's not. Talk some more. I'm going to find it.
we'll talk some more. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so...
She was an amazing woman. I actually pulled up a list. I went on the Billboard Awards and I pulled up a list of the 35 greatest R&B artists of all time.
Right.
And she was top five, top five being Aretha Franklin. And then it would go number four, Ray Charles, Smokey Robinson, Stevie Wonder. And then number one is Michael Jackson. So, I mean.
So, okay. So let's go to that piece.
Okay.
Didn't J-Lo get a Michael Jackson award?
So at the VMA, she got the Michael Jackson Video Vanguard Award.
Okay.
The reason why the MTV created that category was because of Thriller.
They wanted to make money off of Michael Jackson's name.
Yes. But Michael Jackson's Thriller is basically like the best video of all time, in my opinion.
Really?
Because it's literally like a mini movie, and no one in that time they weren't making videos like that.
Is that the one where he does his moonwalk?
He does the moonwalk, I think, in every video, but that was the one with the zombies.
See, I'm not a big Michael Jackson fan.
Oh, I am. I love him.
No, I mean, I don't like him. I don't like him.
I like his music.
Yeah.
Not really him.
Well, I mean.
Correction.
I never met him.
Yeah.
But I, you know, I mean, you know, but anyway. But, so anyway. So, okay. So, but the one thing I got to say about him is I got to recognize the fact that that so many people really do, you know, really do relate to his stuff.
Enjoy his music. Yeah,
yeah, enjoy his stuff. But you know, in light of some of the other conversation we had,
right?
I mean, he was weird.
He had a tough childhood, a very abusive childhood.
Yeah. Did he?
Yeah, very abusive. Yeah.
So I mean, but you know, there's some weird stuff.
Yeah,
there, let me tell you.
Yeah.
It's but anyway. So what do we got? So let's listen to Aretha.
Grace?
Yeah, Amazing Grace by Aretha. So I think that that's not a bad way to end our show.
No.
Not a bad way to end our show.
Yeah.
You know, whether it be China, where we need God's grace to kind of allow religion to blossom there, and or we need to, in the situation of our churches, we certainly need God's grace, and that is a very... difficult situation. So let's end by saying Amazing Grace. Thanks for being with us on Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Join us again next week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.